Livewire with Jeff Dorset.
And a very good day to each and every one of you. And I've got the PR notes in front of me from Gary Hobson. It says, Jeff, you're going to be talking to the suave, sophisticated, debonair and the better looking member of the Kemp family. So welcome, Gary Kemp.
Oh, well, he's obviously, you know, he's doing his money's worth. He's getting his money's worth out of me. I'm very proud to be talking to you, Jeff.
Oh, right. Super stuff. Well, look, I was involved in part of the interviews with the documentary with Rusty and Marilyn about the Blitz kids story, and you were on it as well. What a wonderful time that was. I mean, I believe Spandau's first gig was there, 5th of December, 1979.
That's right, the blue plaque is still outside the building.
Wow. How did that feel? I mean, looking at it there, I never went to the club myself, Gary, but it looks like an amazing array of people and a fun time.
Yeah, it was fun, but we were very earnest with our fun. You know, we were seriously having fun in a way that was, you know, we wanted to get our band off the ground, and we'd found ourselves amongst a group of people that were really all of the same age, that were really interesting people, that were all determined to somehow create the 80s. In the world of culture, and we were the house band. I mean, it isn't something that was unusual. You know, if you look back through pop music history, it's happened quite a lot. You know, Pink Floyd were at the UFO Club in Tottenham Court Road. They were their sort of house band, as it were, of psychedelia. T-Rex down at Middle Earth Club, they were the beginnings of glam. You know, it's we were just that wave of the next wave of youth culture, pop culture that was coming through, and we were very fortunate to be part of it, because it helped to springboard us into the charts, if you like.
Yeah, I've got a wonderful book in front of me, written by Richard Evans, called Remembering the 80s. And there's a great statement from you there that said, we were taking dance music like Chic, mixing it with punk and rock and the likes of David Bowie. It was a combination of rock and dance music, fundamental marriage to the sound of the 80s. And that really sort of sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was obviously an influence coming from Germany with sort of Kraftwerk, but then Bowie had already sort of picked up on that in the mid 70s, and he'd already taken electronica to a much deeper into the charts, if you like. So we were kind of interested in all of that, and there was definitely a sense of the 70s were yesterday. We didn't want to be involved with talking to the likes of the Enemy or Melody Maker. We wanted our own magazine, and there came The Face, and that was in color, and then smash hits, of course, you know, because we were interested in making pop records at the same time. We didn't want to just be, you know, an art house band. You know, I'd grown up buying singles. That's all I'd ever done, you know. So, well, it's not all. I also bought Pink Floyd and Genesis, but I believed in 7-inch singles, and that's sort of where we wanted to end up, really. Yeah. I think all the bands did, you know, Duran, ABC, you know, Culture Club, Human League.
Yeah. I mean, you had 23 hit singles during that period and 30 million albums. Now, I'm not a songwriter, but I wondered, how did it feel, Gary, the first time you heard one of your written songs on the radio?
Well, it still feels good. I mean, it still feels like, you know, I'm excited about it. You know, when this song that's come out now got first played on the radio a week or so ago, you know, I sat there waiting for it, and I wanted to hear what it sounded like on the radio. That's what you're always really interested in. Is it loud enough? Is it sound like is it as loud as all the other records? You know, you know, everything is a step at a time in music. You aim for that, and then you're aiming a bit higher, and then you're aiming a bit higher. And I'm never, you know, and then you end up in court together arguing.
So. Oh, dear. Yeah. But and what was it like the very first time you went on Top of the Pops? Because here we are, you know, the biggest TV show around at the time. And how did that feel? Presumably, yeah. To cut a long story short, you know, we're on there. And how did that feel for you and the boys?
No, Top of the Pops was the Holy Grail. You know, I my life got changed in 1972 when I saw Bowie doing Starman on Top of the Pops.
Yeah, with his arm around Mick Ronson. Yes, we know.
Yeah. And you know, there were other seminal moments, you know, of great, you know, and it was something we watched every week. You know, my nan watched it.
Yeah.
You know, 16 million people watched Top of the Pops.
Sure.
it was a cultural reference point for everybody, and so to be on it was extraordinary. To get into the top five on our first record was even more exciting. And people forget what singles are like then. You know, nowadays you don't have to sell that many. In those days, it was, you know, you had to appeal to a large swathe of the general public.
True, isn't it funny that you could do 26,000 streams or something and end up with number one on the chart there? And back in the day, how many sold a million? You know, it was incredible, the amount that went on. What's your all-time favourite Spandau song, Gary? I mean, mine is Through the Barricades, but I know there's so many. But what's your personal favourite?
I think if you're talking about singles, and I think as a song, that was probably... is probably my favourite song. I think as a track that comes punching out of the radio, I think it's Chart Number One. I just think we managed to get that really right. You know, when we first delved into funk and we had Beggar and Coke playing horns, I think that was what we wanted.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that.
Yeah. You're also part of Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets. And I see that a name crops up there, which is Guy Pratt, which is also on your new album. Guy Pratt was a guest on our show about a year ago. What a great guy he is.
Yeah, Guy. So Guy was, I knew Guy in the 80s. He played bass with Ice House, but he also was a great session player. So he played on Madonna records. He played on Michael Jackson records, Robbie Robertson. And then he joined Pink Floyd as the bass player after Roger left when he was in his 20s. And this is in the late 80s, and he's played on all the big major Pink Floyd tours. He's played with all David Gilmour solo albums. And we're in this band with Nick Mason, the drummer from Floyd, called Nick Mason Saucerful of Secrets. We do all the early stuff, and it's been very, very successful for us. And I think it's what gave me the confidence to want to come and do this album, because, you know, I sing in the band. It's much more expressive for me as a guitar player, you know, being embraced by that Pink Floyd fraternity. I think that allowed me to come and make this album.
Yeah. And of course, you do an Apple One podcast with Guy. Is it called Rock on Tours, which has been extremely successful?
It's doing really well. Guy and I, you know, talk to other musicians. We've had David Coverdale. We've had Alice Cooper, John Bon Jovi, some really great musicians on, Boy George, Gary Newman. And it's doing well. Yeah, it's doing well. It's just a musician chatting with two other musicians. And I think they open out a little bit more because we understand their life, as it were. We just had Mike Rutherford from Genesis on this weekend.
Yeah.
And I think it came out of the fact that Guy and I, you know, we're constantly cracking jokes on the tour bus. And in the old days, people would have said, you two get a room. Now they say, you two get a podcast. And that's what we did.
Yeah. Fascinating with Mike Rutherford. Don't want to go too long in the story, but he and I go back quite a long way. And my car being locked in some kind of lockup with steel gates across it, trying to get out, and going back to his tour bus because he'd invited us there to say, has he got any wire clippers or anything that could break in through the steel gates? So that's the time I always remember Mike Rutherford. Now, on the new album, you've sort of said about inspiration with some of the vocals, because you highlighted three bands: Wings, Supertramp, and 10cc. Now, you're looking at great people there. I mean, I've actually got Denny Sewell of Wings on the show tomorrow night talking about Ram On, because they've redone with 100 musicians the original Paul McCartney and Wings album of Ram. So that will be interesting to have a chat. But 10cc, what a wonderful set of people. The only band I know with four lead singers and four writers.
Yeah, no, incredible. And we had the album's out. You know, when I'm recording, I'm often referencing stuff, and because this album was very much about my past, it was a lot of it was about me trying to join the dots with the people that I, the incarnations, the versions of me that I was, and how that represents me now. You know, and I think it was a universal feeling of you know, this is something that everyone, when you get to a certain age, starts to think about. And I was looking at a kind of scrapbook of my musical references, and they were, let's try and make our vocals sound like the ones on this Wings record, or this, or the guitar sound like the what he does here on that 10cc record. I've had an eclectic set of albums all my life, you know, everything from Genesis to ABBA. And I think, you know, I wanted to draw on some of the best of my of my tastes, as it were, and emulate them to a certain extent, because I was singing about my past here and there.
So In Solo is the album that comes out on the 18th of June. How long did it take to put together, Gary, from start to finish?
Well, I'd already started it. I started the writing process while I was in America with Nick, and I was writing the lyrics first primarily. And then I'd started recording some of the demos at home. We went into lockdown and I wanted to carry on because then I also had a tour cancelled. So I found myself working remotely with drummers like Roger Taylor from Queen and Ash Sohn, who works with Trevor Horn. Guy Pratt played bass. Richard Jones is on this new single. He's from The Feeling. And we did it all remotely. So, we spoke just on Zoom, and then I'd send them the demos and they would send me back what they'd done, and we'd have a conversation, and gradually it would end up, being on the record. It was a great way to work. I really enjoyed it. But when the studios opened, I went in and I did string orchestras and played guitar loudly in a studio myself. So it was interesting. I think, as an artist, you roll with the punches. And while all that was going on and things were stopping us from doing things the way we were used to doing it, we were just looking for other ways to achieve what we wanted to achieve.
Yeah. And when hopefully we are through all this pandemic, Gary, what will be your plans for the opening and get out there and do what you want to do?
Well, next year, in the first half of next year, I'm working with Nick Mason again. I'm with the Sourceful going on tour for the first half of next year, mostly around the world. But whether or not I do my own stuff at the end of this year depends on the pandemic, really, and depends on what we're allowed to do. I don't really want to book things now, get people to buy tickets, and then the promoter sits on the money. I just think that's unfair.
Yeah, and that's happening all the time, sadly, because people are keen to get out there and see you guys and all of your peers, and they're anxious to get out there. And, of course, from my point of view, working with venues, and I want to see them open. Before we went into this awful pandemic, there were a number of them who were struggling financially. And, of course, they've now had so many months and years of struggling now, whether they're going to be able to reopen in the way that they did. And that's our grassroots, just like people talking about grassroots football. This is where the grassroots of music comes from, and we want these people to survive.
Well, I am I'm a trustee of the Theatres Trust, so I it's a body that looks after all the theatres in the country, and a lot of it is to do with placemaking, and it's to do with people's communities and whether or not that's the focus. If those buildings vanish, they have no heart to their community.
Sure.
It's been good talking to you, Jeff.
It is super stuff. And, of course, like me being a gooner, you're going to be behind your sofa on a Thursday night waiting for Arsenal to implode, which we hope doesn't happen. But I wish you well, Gary. And we're going to play Ahead of the Game, which is the lead single off the album. Comes out on the 18th of June, does the album In Solo. Gary Kemp, great talking to you, and huge success. And hopefully catch you on the road sometime.
Thanks, Jeff. All the best.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
So this is Gary Kemp for the brand new album In Solo, and this is Ahead of the Game, playing.
I love you, wake with such energy. You know I love you, always first to the draw. As fast as you is something I'll never be. I'm so sorry, now the mess of myself. So trying to make isn't making sense. Who don't you love it when your heart isn't making sense?
Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.